This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 545 of the genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has committed massacres across all areas of the Gaza Strip while its forced starvation and displacement policies continue unabated. As Palestinians in Gaza tried to celebrate Eid, the holiday marking the end of the month of Ramadan, Israeli airstrikes escalated and intensified. On March 30th, the first day of Eid, Israeli attacks killed more than 50 Palestinians and injured nearly 200. The next day, the Israeli army issued mass forced displacement orders on the entire Rafah governorate in the south. Similar displacement orders were issued in North Gaza, Gaza City, and in eastern Khan Yunus over the last several days. Samir Zakout, the Gaza-based deputy director of Al Mizan Center for Human Rights, said that, quote, "Israel's continued closure of crossings and the obstruction of humanitarian aid are worsening the situation in Gaza to an unprecedented degree, even compared to the past 17 months. Without fuel, essential services such as desalination plants and water wells have ceased functioning, pushing people toward life-threatening levels of thirst and hunger. The scale of deprivation is unlike anything we have seen since the start of the genocide in October 2023. I strongly condemn the international community's continued failure to take any meaningful action in the face of an ongoing genocide." The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reported that Israeli forces have killed more than 1,000 Palestinians since the resumption of their full-scale genocidal attacks on March 18th, and that entire families have been wiped out. Since dawn on Wednesday, April 2nd, Israeli attacks killed at least 77 Palestinians, according to medical sources. Amongst the various massacres, Israel bombed a UN medical clinic in Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, killing more than 20 people, according to the Gaza government media office. Al Jazeera reporter Anas Al-Sharif interviewed a mother whose children, including her newborn baby, were killed in the airstrike. The mother said that, quote, "We were sitting, unaware of what was about to happen, when suddenly we were engulfed in flames. I started screaming for my daughter. I came out from under the rubble and removed what was on top of me. And someone removed the rubble off me. And I just stood up and started looking for my children. And all the children were on fire. They were martyred. I just gave birth 2 weeks ago. My little daughter had no head. They showed her to me. I had just changed her and put her to sleep in her cradle. I only have one daughter left." The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, stated this week that an average of 100 Palestinian children have been killed or injured every day since the resumption of the full-scale attacks. Physicians in Gaza say that they spent the last few days cutting off new Eid holiday clothes from dead children. An American emergency doctor, Razan Al-Nahas, recounted her experience from Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunus on March 30th.
So it's the first day of Eid, and it's been a really horrible day here in Gaza. Khan Yunus was hit terribly, and we had multiple mass casualty incidents at Nasser Hospital, with the majority of patients being children. A lot of them actually came in dead on arrival. I saw three young children, a four-year-old, maybe a six-year-old, and seven-year-old, just covered in shrapnel injuries with mangled extremities. They arrived dead, and then we had multiple severely injured children in the emergency department. A few of them died in the emergency department, and then several others with very devastating injuries, uncertain if they'll actually survive them, high likelihood that they won't. But these children were all, they all came in dressed in their Eid clothing. You could tell that they were dressed in Eid clothes. You could tell that their clothing was new. Even the kids that came in with minor injuries, a lot of the little girls had their fingernails painted. A few of them had their hair braided. You know, just trying to have some sort of feeling of celebration, some feeling of it being a holiday, but they did not get to experience that one bit. And it was actually a very horrific day. Last night, I actually sat down and I just prayed and I hoped that it would actually be a somewhat quiet day so that the kids could actually feel some type of celebration, some type of peace, get to visit family, get to, you know, eat with their family members, whatever little food is available. But they were not even granted that, unfortunately, and just been quite devastating.
That was Dr. Razan Al-Nahas reporting from Nasser Medical Complex. Last week, we reported on the Palestine Red Crescent Society medics and Palestinian Civil Defense first responders who went missing on March 23rd. They disappeared after one ambulance crew was dispatched in an attempt to treat injured people following an airstrike in Rafah. Israeli soldiers had fired on the first ambulance, injuring the paramedics. The Red Crescent then sent another three ambulances to find and treat their colleagues and to rescue those who had been attacked. But all contact was lost, and rescuers were blocked by Israeli soldiers for a week from trying to locate the paramedics. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said that additional ambulances and civil defense crews were able to reach the scene on Friday, March 28th, following international coordination. They discovered the mission's director, Civil Defense Officer Anwar Abdul Hamid Al-Attar, quote, dead with his body shredded. The rescue crews that arrived Friday also found all of the Red Crescent vehicles, fire trucks, and ambulances completely reduced to charred metal. 1 week after their disappearances, on March 30th, a mass grave was found containing the bodies of eight Red Crescent paramedics and six civil defense first responders, and an employee of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, according to the civil defense. One body was recovered with his hands bound, according to the Red Crescent, and Israeli bulldozers had tried to bury the vehicles. Dr. Bashar Murad, the Red Crescent's director of health programs, said one of the paramedics in the convoy had been on a call to his colleagues at the ambulance station when the attack took place, The Guardian reported. Quote, he informed us that he was injured and requested assistance, and that another person was also injured, Murad said. A few minutes later, during the call, we heard the sound of Israeli soldiers arriving at the location, speaking in Hebrew. The conversation was about gathering the team, with statements like, gather them at the wall and bring some restraints to tie them. This indicated that a large number of the medical staff were still alive. Jonathan Whittall, the head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, was on the scene when the mass grave containing the bodies of the rescue workers was found.
Health workers should never be a target, and yet we're here today digging up a mass grave of first responders and paramedics. 7 days ago, civil defense and PRCS ambulances arrived at this scene. One by one, they were hit, they were struck. Their bodies were gathered and buried in this mass grave. We're digging the heart in their uniforms, with their gloves on. They were here to save lives. Instead, they ended up in a mass grave. Their vehicles, their ambulances, UN vehicles, civil defense vehicles are crushed and dumped covered in sand next to us. It's an absolute horror.
Mahmoud Bassal, the spokesperson for the Civil Defense Corps in Gaza, said that one of the medics, quote, had his clothes removed and another one was beheaded, and that they had been executed at point-blank range by Israeli soldiers. A member of the civil defense team involved in the effort to recover the victims' bodies said in a statement to Euromed Human Rights Monitor that, quote, the bodies had distinct features, but they were in the early stages of decomposition. When they were examined, it was evident that a barrage of bullets had struck them. Based on my observations, the injuries were located in the chest region. A closer look revealed that some of the victims had still been alive despite their injuries. They were apparently buried alive with their feet bound. One body, the civil defense rescue worker added, quote, was covered in severe bruises and showed evidence of torture, and his legs seemed bound. After being shot in the back of the head, his face was completely ripped apart. Another rescue worker, he said, quote, was shot in the head from a very close distance, causing his skull to shatter. We discovered that every employee of the Palestinian Red Crescent had been shot in the left and right sides of the head. The civil defense in Gaza warned that the execution of these medical workers is, quote, aimed at emptying the Gaza Strip of humanitarian and relief services. Quote, in light of these dangerous plans, the international community, the International Civil Defense Organization, and international human rights organizations are called upon today to take effective action and not simply watch these Israeli crimes, which amount to war crimes and genocide. One Red Crescent Society worker, an ambulance officer named Assad al-Nasasra, remains missing. Bakeries in Gaza have been forced to close because of Israel's month-long intensified blockade and the ongoing closure of all crossings. The World Food Program said that because of the lack of flour and fuel, all 25 of the bakeries it supports are out of service. Jonathan Woodall, the head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, said on Wednesday that, quote, the humanitarian crisis is quite literally spiraling out of control. On April 1st, all 25 subsidized bakeries by the WFP were closed, and people's survival is dependent on an aid system that itself is under attack as aid workers are killed and our work is obstructed. And yet we're told, and I find it very difficult to hear, that Gaza has enough food because supplies have entered during a month-long ceasefire, following a year in which supplies were literally drip-fed into the Gaza Strip. Woodall added, quote, my colleagues tell me that they just want to die with their families. Their worst fear is to survive alone. Day and night, we listen to airstrikes shaking Gaza. Bombs are falling nonstop. Hospitals are overflowing with mass casualties, the one just a block from me included. It's an endless loop of blood, pain, and death, and Gaza has become a death trap. And as humanitarians, I need to emphasize this. We cannot accept that Palestinian civilians are dehumanized to the point of being somehow unworthy of survival. Woodall added that the medical workers executed by Israeli forces and buried in a mass grave is, quote, emblematic of the point that we've reached in Gaza. What is happening here defies decency. It defies humanity. It defies the law. It really is a war without limits. Another journalist was killed in Gaza this week. On April 1st, Mohammed Saleh al-Bardawil, who was a broadcaster for Sawat al-Aqsa Radio, was killed in an Israeli airstrike along with his wife and their three children in Khan Yunus. The Gaza government media office stated that with al-Bardawil's killing, the number of Palestinian journalists and media workers murdered by Israel since October 2023 is 209. The Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs at Brown University, in their Costs of War project, said this week that, quote, the war in Gaza has, since October 7th, 2023, killed more journalists than the U.S. Civil War, World Wars I and II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, including the conflicts in Cambodia and Laos, the wars in Yugoslavia in the 1990s and 2000s, and the post-9/11 war in Afghanistan combined. It is, quite simply, the worst ever conflict for reporters. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of Traitors Determined to Reopen Despite Obstacles by Shoja Al-Safadi, a writer and poet, a member of the Palestinian Writers Union, and a founder and former director of the Friendship Cultural Forum. Shoja, who owned a cosmetics store in Gaza City that has since been destroyed, writes that when she returned north in January after 470 days of Israeli military aggression, she was shocked by what she saw. Quote, my return came about because of the fragile ceasefire that came into effect on January 19th and which Israel ended on March 18th. That brief respite from Israel's genocidal violence allowed tens of thousands of displaced people to return to their devastated neighborhoods in Gaza City. Most of those returning to what remains of their former homes did so, as I did, on foot. Chef Warif Hamido had moved to Gaza from Syria years ago, escaping the war that had engulfed his homeland. With no legal documentation, leaving Gaza was not an option. So he built a life here, opening a successful restaurant in the Al Rimal neighborhood of Gaza City, specializing in Syrian cuisine with a version of chicken and beef shawarma that became very popular. When the Israeli attacks on Gaza began, he fled south like many others, settling temporarily in Rafah. Hoping to sustain himself, he reestablished his restaurant in the middle of Gaza in a smaller iteration, serving whatever food was available. But his new venture was doomed from the start. The Israeli blockade prevented the entry of poultry, beef, and many essential ingredients, forcing him to shut down again. Now back in Gaza City, he walked through what remains of his old restaurant, Chef Warif, running his fingers along the cracked tiles and shattered glass. The cost of repairs is staggering, he said, but he refuses to give up. With borrowed money and personal savings, he has begun the painstaking process of rebuilding. War has already taken everything from me twice, once in Syria and now here, he told the Electronic Intifada. I won't let it take my future too. I will do my best to rebuild and start from scratch again. I do love my job, Gaza and its people. With no way to leave and no aid in sight, Warif said he has no choice but to gamble on his own resilience, hoping that by reopening his restaurant, he can reclaim at least some sense of stability. That's an excerpt from Traders Determined to Reopen Despite Obstacles by Shoja Al-Safadi, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to share images of people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. The Samir Project, a local mutual aid group in Gaza, posted this clip of art classes being taught in the Shati refugee camp near Gaza City, and children being excited for new notebooks. The group said that three art classes are being taught every week by their incredible art teacher, Mr. Anas. These classes are therapeutic for the children as they express how they feel through art. Two classes are done for children and one class for high school students. The Samir Project covers the teacher's fee and the pens and paper for the classes. Mental health may seem secondary right now, the project writes, but we believe it is a priority and we will continue to implement our mental health initiatives, providing a moment of relief or joy for the children. We are in constant awe of the children of Gaza who are excited to learn despite the constant bombings and famine looming. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.